Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
And welcome to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation. This is the edition of The Gathering. As you know, that's our on-air afterlife discussion show. Tonight's topic will be infants and children and their supposed connections beyond the veil. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and I'm joined by Melissa and Fran, and Tom Gould can't make it tonight, so he will be back for our next edition of The Gathering next month. Tonight's sponsor is L&R Productions, and you can find them on the web at lnrproductions.com. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, Bob.
And we usually start off with a couple of announcements, and let me start off with one for everybody.
Start off with one.
And that is that we are moving to a new time slot next week.
Good announcement.
I think it's everybody will appreciate that we'll be on an hour later, so that means it will be airing from 8 to 9 p.m. on the East Coast and from 5 to 6 p.m. on the West Coast. So
and everything in between.
And everything in between. And I guess certainly on the East Coast, that'll give people a little bit more time to get settled, to be able to listen to the show. And maybe we'll pick up some more listeners on the West Coast at a more reasonable time. So what announcements do you have for us?
Well, let's talk first about our annual conference, because that is filling up quickly. And, in fact, this year we made it a one-day conference. Its theme is There Chocolate in the Afterlife? It will be on November 12th from 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in Hopog, New York. And that's accessible by the Islip Airport. And there is a shuttle that will take you to the hotel. And we also have a special group rate of $109 a night for up to four adults in the room. We've got Dr. T. Lee Bauman. We've got Lloyd Auerbach, and they're going to be presenting evidence of the afterlife. We're going to break for a formal sit-down luncheon, and afterwards we're going to be treated to a chocolate tasting in note of the theme, Is There Chocolate in the Afterlife? And then when we come back to our stadium seating lecture room, we are going to be meeting Teresa Caputo, who a lot of people have seen on TV. She has her own TV show now called Long Island Medium on the TLC channel. And our regular Angelina Diana, who hosts our Mediums and Messages show. And they will each be doing spirit communication and talking about mediumship. So this is a full day. If you're a member, it's only $100 to go. That's filling up. You want to hurry up, because those of you who didn't make your reservations missed the fundraiser the night before on 11-11-11 Night of Mediums, which is filled up.
Yeah, so the fundraiser on Night of Mediums is sold out.
Right.
And but this is that's why it is important to get your reservations in for November 12th. And if you're interested in science, you'll have that. If you're interested in mediums and seeing Teresa Caputo and Angelina Diana, you'll get that, too.
And if you're interested in chocolate, you'll get that, too.
And you also told me that the holidays passed in New York with Teresa Caputo is also sold out.
Right.
So this would be the your best opportunity to get those reservations in.
If you're in New York on November 12th or around New York, that's the best way to see Teresa Caputo now. If you're looking for private appointments with her, I understand she's booked up to almost 2013.
Right.
So this might be your only chance to see her. So our December 17th holidays pass in New York is filled. We do have three other holidays passed. We have two on December 3rd, one in New Jersey with Janet Nohavik, and one in Bethel, Connecticut with Joanne Gerber. And then on December 10th, we have Angelina Diana and afterlife advocate Dave Kane at the Hampton Inn Boston Natick in Natick, Massachusetts. And those are our Holidays Past events for December. And don't forget the Holidays Past raffle. You have to be nuts not to go online right now and buy your tickets. We only have 87 tickets sold.
You can't buy them online, can you?
You get instructions. If you're on our email list, you got an email that has a buy button in it. But online, you'll read the instructions on how to mail us a check.
Right.
But basically, it's $5 a chance, 5 chances for $20, 15 chances for $50, 35 chances for $100, and 100 chances for $200. And each prize is a one-hour phone reading with one of our certified mediums. They are Samara Angelay, Angelina Diana, Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, Stephanie Ann Stevens, and Neil Zapowski. So you definitely want to go and get into this raffle ASAP. So that's about the raffle. And if you are a business and you're listening and you want to advertise on this show, contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. And one last thing, remember, if you need a Visa card, go to the website foreverfamilyfoundation.org, apply for the Visa credit card, then go on to Amazon.com from the Forever Family Foundation site link to Amazon and charge up a storm, because Visa will make a donation to us when you shop and Amazon will make a donation to us when you shop. And if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then go to iGive.com, name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice, and shop your little heart out there. And those are my announcements.
Okay, and after the break, we're going to get started on our topic, children. It's an interesting topic. Perhaps our listeners can call in with some experiences. And we're going to talk about, are children and infants, are they more receptive to psychic phenomena because they're closer to the veil, so to speak? Does it stay with them? Does it run in families? And we'll talk about all that good stuff. So stay with us, and we'll get right into our topic in about 3 minutes, so stay tuned.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At L&R Productions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. L&R Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio, and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. www.lndrproductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
Is there chocolate in the afterlife? Don't miss the 5th Annual Forever Family Foundations Conference on Saturday, November 12th at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York. This all-day conference features presentations by medical doctor Lee Bowman, offering scientific evidence of an afterlife, and paranormal evidence by noted parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach. A full sit-down luncheon will be highlighted by a formal chocolate tasting, and guests will be treated to two sessions of spirit communication conducted by certified mediums Angelina Diana and Teresa Caputo. Call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707, or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to Signs of Life Radio. Topic tonight is raising...
infants and their supposed connection being...
Infants and their... Thank you, Fran.
because I'm...
We're talking about kids who see ghosts. We're talking about children and psychic phenomena. You know, I guess when we talk about these things... I was reading today about some people in history that were... very intuitive when they were children, and because of their intuitive and psychic abilities, they had a lot of problems when they were children. And that list includes Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein, Leonardo da Vinci, Winston Churchill, and Emily Dickinson. So, I guess when we talk about, and I mentioned that they had some trouble because of it, so... Why is it that children that are intuitive, you know, have trouble? My interpretation is many. I have the same opinion, is that it all has to do with fear. A lot of people they don't understand psychic phenomena. It's not something that's normal, so to speak, with their five senses. So it's the unknown. So they fear it, and then children, you know, pick up on it. I mean, I guess the question is, you know, are children naturally psychic, and are infants born, with psychic abilities, and or is it the same as the rest of us? I know the mediums will tell us that we all have the ability, but yet not all of us exhibit it. So, you know,
as adults,
as adults, and a lot of the it seems like the intuitive children. It makes a lot of sense when you think about it, because they are not taught yet they shouldn't see, you know, what they see, and also they have no language. So let me put it this way: when you remember, you're both moms, so when you were raising your children, if you went up to them when they were infants, you know, and you went up to them with a big smile on your face, they naturally would smile back at you, I would think, and because that's my experience, and they would pick up the vibes. But if you were having a bad day and something happened, I think they would. You find that the infants pick up vibes from you?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely, they pick it up. And I, walking up and smiling at an infant and having them smile back, you still have to capture their attention. I think the thing about infants is they're not married to the physical world, that they're taking in all this physicality around them, but they're also still attached to a non-physical world. And so oftentimes, and I bet you can ask mothers this question as well, is how many times did you go look at the infant, and the infant was looking over your shoulder, beyond you? And that happens very, very often.
Yeah. You have the same experience, Melissa?
I have, and I agree. I think their minds are not as cluttered as ours are, and so I think it's a natural skill or ability that they're born with, and over time, if not nurtured, it dissipates when lives get a little bit busier for them.
Certainly the language skills come when you're around two or so, when you start with kids.
Well, I know pretty girly, and some kids speak later.
Yeah.
No, I have the two, my own granddaughter and my sister's grandson, and he's two, and he's quite verbal.
Yeah.
And then with my granddaughter, who's just 17 months old, just starting, you know, the basic labeling, mom, dad, cat, things like that.
Yeah, I guess, you know, when you think about it, so they don't have language yet until that age, so they relate to the world based upon unspoken and unseen impressions. So it's purely, it seems, intuitive, this that comes into play. You know, they sense things. After language, maybe they don't have to sense things.
All right, so now here's the greatest new child-rearing idea,
yeah,
is if parents would learn to be more intuitive, then they would be able to communicate with their infants before their infants would learn the English language and how to communicate, and we would eliminate all of the screaming and crying that goes on because they'd be able to communicate to their mom exactly what was wrong. I need a diaper changed. I need to be burped. I have indigestion because you ate Chinese food and you're nursing me. Whatever the story is, they can then. Yeah.
Well, don't mothers say, you know, that's mother's instinct. You know, a mother will describe that as mother's instinct, so they will intuitively know what their child needs. You know, sometimes it's based on observation, you know, and it's maybe it's not as much intuitive as, and sometimes it really is. I mean, there's obviously a connection between, you know, mother and child. So what about the theory that the reason that children are more intuitive is because they just came from the spirit world? I mean,
I believe that 100%.
I do as well.
And so in that, you know, so they come from a world of thought and telepathy, right? And now they're born into a physical body, but they're used to being, so to speak, I guess used to is maybe a poor choice of words, but they're accustomed to communicating a different way.
And no one's listening to them. That's the problem. And no one's listening to them.
Right.
They're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and no one's listening to them. And then we can't figure out why they're screaming and crying.
What's the most common thing that you hear about children and mothers talking about it is that children describing seeing or having imaginary friends, right? I mean, did your children ever?
My daughter had Devi, Mark, and Leah, and they went with us everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And then when she was seemed to be maybe ready to let them go, they died in a fire in her bedroom. That's what she told us.
Really?
And they were gone.
And how old was she at the time, you remember?
Well, I would say three uh-huh. or four when she let them go.
And were these friends of were they stuffed animals or she just
Did you ever think to investigate in the house that you're living in or that you were living in that there was a fire there previous to when you moved in?
It was we were actually living in my parents' home at the time, and it was a very old house. And actually, there had been a bit of a fire there when I was a teenager, right in that. I don't know if it wasn't in that section of the house.
Right.
Minor chimney fire, but maybe that was in her head that she had heard.
Oh.
Of this minor chimney fire.
It seems unusual that almost every child, it seems, you know, has an imaginary friend at some point, you know, and, you know, you say, well, why is that? I mean, what would be the reason that children would, you know, make up imaginary friends? I guess sometimes there are legitimate reasons, you know, maybe there's trouble in the house and they want to, you know, it's an escape kind of thing, and I guess that has to be investigated, but I think for the most part, we still live in a society where parents somehow think that there's something wrong, and they seek attention. They seek medical attention or psychological attention.
Well, I think because that's the culture here in the United States, is that if your child has an imaginary friend, you should deal with it on a psychological basis, you know, and hope they'll outgrow it. And they don't say, oh, well, it could be spirit, it could be their guides, it could be the way they get through the day. Parents don't do that normally, and they don't encourage this communication with a non-physical entity. I mean, it could legitimately be a communication with a non-physical entity. I mean, now you have adults all over the world now suddenly becoming enlightened, and now they're first looking for their guides when these kids had their guides all along.
Well, that's one of my regrets, because I remember, you know, our children having at least one of them, you know, having conversations with imaginary friends, and we did what we're describing. We figured this could be a problem. We went to a psychologist. Had I known better, been more informed or enlightened, I would have sat down with her and had a discussion and join in and find out more about these imaginary friends instead of dismissing it like an idiot. And I guess that's what a lot of parents are going through. Also, there are a lot of kids now, and we've talked about this on previous shows, that it seems like more and more kids, not only with imaginary friends, but they're not only seeing things, but they're picking up information psychically. And that, for somebody who doesn't believe in such phenomena, or doesn't believe in an afterlife, or for whatever reason, that could be frightening to a parent, because now they say, okay, now my kid's going to be labeled or judged, you know, and he's going to, you know, he or she is going to be an outcast. And, you know, and on the other hand, some parents, you know, embrace it, and they go a little bit more to the extreme the other way, you know, and they try to make their kids perform, which that's kind of another, a big mistake, you know.
Another indication of the kind of society we're living in, you know. If your kids can do a trick, then let's capitalize on it.
Yeah, well, I guess it all comes down to, you know, parents have to have their own frame of reference. You know, if they, if you don't know anything about this stuff, learn, right? I mean, if the parents learn, then maybe they'll change their view and not go and put their kids on medication, you know?
You know, yeah. Speaking of those, we've talked about this before, the children who have these abilities, and I've been, in my field of work, I've been working with a lot of children with autism, and a lot of the parents will tell me that their children really are sensing their mood. Sort of sounds obvious, but it's in more subtle ways than that. And in some of the reading I've done about this to try to understand it a little bit better, I came across a passage in one of the books that I'd been reading called The Soul of Autism.
Oh, nice.
And it's such a mystery what's going on with these children's brains and minds as it is. But there's so many other untapped things that we could explore further. So this one passage the mom wrote, and if it's all right, I'll read this little bit to you from The Soul of Autism by William Stillman, who I believe also has autism.
Oh. Yeah, I do.
Yes, and this is, I read a previous book to this. This is a newer book. The title of it escapes me right now. It's probably written in the forward or on the back cover, but
Autism and the God Connection.
That's it. He believes that being autistic is just an escape from the physical world. That these kids have not fully acclimated to being in the physical world, and they're much more comfortable in the non-physical world. And that's why one of the things that autistic children will do is rock.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that when you raise your vibration, which is what rocking will do,
mm-hmm.
it brings you into the non-physical world. And so by rocking, it takes them away from the physicality around them, and they're able better to deal with noises and the things that upset them that they can't deal with in the physical world.
And these are the things I see all the time with some of my students, all the time. Head shaking, all sorts of things, as you said, to raise perhaps their vibration.
Right, and if you look with, let's just pull a medium out of the air, uh-huh. George Anderson, what does he do to focus? He shakes his hand back and forth as if he's writing, but he's really just scribbling. And that's how he gets himself out of the physical world. Mm-hmm. So it does make sense.
Well, in this passage, it's one of the mothers speaking, a California mom, who was once perplexed by her son Andrew's spiritual giftedness. She says, "This last year I've come to accept my son's special abilities. Andrew is 10 years old. From very early on, my son would act out my and others' worst fears. I would be at someone's home and think in my mind, oh, I hope he doesn't pull down the drapes. No sooner could I finish my thought, and he would walk over to the drapes and begin to swing on them like Tarzan. I was infuriated because I knew he could somehow hear my fear. It wasn't until about a year ago I truly came to terms with his abilities of audio clairvoyance, his ability to hear others' internal dialogue.
Mm. Well, you know, to follow up on what Fran was saying before, one of the theories with autism is that, you know, we have different brain hemispheres responsible for different things, and with children that exhibit autism, the hemisphere that functions in a lot of other people that allows us to interact with our environment and interpret things, that is kind of shut down in an autistic child. And the other hemisphere that is responsible, among other things, for intuitiveness and perceptiveness and things of that nature are enhanced. Mm-hmm. So it goes in keeping with what you said, Fran. You know, they're in their own world because of that. There may be a physiological, reason for it as well, and that's why some of the autistic children are so incredibly gifted, intuitively. And that's an area of science, I think, that's going to kind of explode as we search for an answer down the road.
As we become more accepting of the search for the answer down the road.
Just earlier this afternoon, I had a workman in my house, a very talented tile man, putting tiles in my bathroom. And he happened to mention to me that his son had autism and that his daughter had also been on the spectrum but now is, adjusting just fine. And so I couldn't help but ask him as I headed out the door to come over here for the radio show, not knowing any of his beliefs, I asked him if he felt his kids had any, displayed any psychic abilities. And right away he told me that his daughter, who's 8 years old now, was born after both of his own parents had passed away in the house that they live in. And he said when his daughter was around 4 years old and his son was just an infant, there was a storm one night, and they heard the daughter crying in her bedroom, but they couldn't get to her right away because caring for the infant. And then she stopped. So the next day, the mother asked her, I heard you crying in the night. Was everything okay? And she said, I was scared. The storm, scared me. But this nice lady came to me, and she told me not to worry. She said, everything will be just fine. And they were so startled by this, and the father then went and got a picture of his mother, and the little girl was like, yes, that's the lady. She's very nice. So he was very touched by that. And he told me he's not a believer. He needs proof, scientific proof of all of this, but he then went on to tell me several other stories, and in fact, he said his daughter says she hears singing coming from the closet. And he said, I believe he said it was his grandmother, someone he'd never met, who loved to sing opera. So I hope he's going to pay closer attention now when his...
You hear so many of these.
I love when they say they're not a believer, and then they'll tell you story after story after story, and you want to say to them, "And what is it that makes you not believe?"
It's always, I'm not a believer, but. Well, we are talking about children and intuitive abilities. The number here, if you'd like to call in, is 1-888-627-6008. There does seem, not only with children, but there seems to be a link with illness and trauma and psychic abilities. We've heard that from the experts that study near-death experiences. Many of them come back with enhanced, new, psychic ability. And you're working, Melissa, with a lot of kids that have certain illnesses and trauma. So, I know you just mentioned that one child, I think you were talking about, but do you see that often with the children that you work with? Or?
Well, it's hard to know. A lot of the students I work with, unfortunately, are nonverbal,
okay.
So it's difficult to hear stories. I did have one little girl who she was very verbal, and she hadn't had any kind of serious trauma, like you mentioned, but
yeah.
She always was talking about her other home with her other mommy, and the mom would get so distressed, go, I don't know why she's saying this, but then when I was alone with the little girl, I'd say, tell me about that other house, and it was yellow, and it was over there, my mother's name was Mary, and she had all of this to tell me, but I
were you thinking reincarnation at all?
I thought, you know, another life, and
Jim Tucker would like to hear about that.
Yeah.
And so to me it was fascinating, and yet the parents are dealing with so much with just their child having a diagnosis and what the future holds for them. So to try to get them to get excited or embrace these other aspects, although there was another book called, let's see, A Gift from My Son by Keeley Lind, I'll mess up this name, Lindelian.
How do you spell it?
Lindelian.
Lindelian?
Can you read that?
It sounds like
Lindelian.
But she had fascinating stories about her son, and she really did try to see the world from his perspective. She could see that he would be very excited by certain paintings, and like have to get up close and be under them, and she would put herself into meditative states and then try to see the world as he did and get close to these paintings, and she was amazed at the way the colors came out. I would almost feel that we might be speaking about oil paintings rather than prints, where the I would imagine fresher paint would have.
But I think that you're interpreting the physicality into it. I think
that's true.
I think from my own experience with art and art history is that when a true artist creates a piece of work, that energy, that thought of creation, even if it's an abstract thing, goes into the piece. Even if it's a print, even if it's an oil painting, that energy of the creation goes into the piece. So then why wouldn't it still be there, speaking on a non-physical energy level, why wouldn't it still be there
mm-hmm.
for the child to see and the mother now in her meditative state also to appreciate that same energy that went into the creation of it?
That's a good point. That's a very good point. This mother also was trained to do craniosacral therapy, which I'm not very familiar with, but I understand it. To me, it's a Reiki-type therapy, and she was trying to help a friend with whatever his problem was, and her son with autism came running into the room, went right to this certain area along the side of the man's head, and placed his hands above it, and afterwards the man was amazed at how well he felt.
Wow.
I think as our culture changes and we become more and more receptive to these things, you know, we'll recognize, you know, these abilities and gifts of children, you know, more. And we probably will have a lot to learn from that. You know, I mean, I was reading a study that they did among children who are already psychic. And out of that group, 77% of them had precognitive abilities. So, I mean, that being able to anticipate and see what's going to happen in the future can go a long way, not only in the children's development, but in those that surround the children. So, you know, maybe our whole way of living will change, you know, in the future. Also, in most of these studies, it's usually, from what I see, it's like 2-1 with, especially with children, that female children are 65%, you know, more apt to be psychic, and, you know, from one of the studies I read in male, 35%. So I don't know the reason for
that. Well, that goes along with the Kabbalistic studies that it's a female, it goes in the tree of life, the communication portion is a female tendency. So it goes along with, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the discussion. And if you have something to add, or you know of an intuitive child or have one, give us a call at 1-888-627-6008. So stay with us. When we come back, we'll hear more about these gifted children and more about the unseen world. So stay with us.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At LNRProductions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. LNR Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. www.LNRProductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
Is there chocolate in the afterlife? Don't miss the 5th Annual Forever Family Foundations Conference on Saturday, November 12th at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York. This all-day conference features presentations by medical doctor Lee Bounum, offering scientific evidence of an afterlife, and paranormal evidence by noted parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach. A full sit-down luncheon will be highlighted by a formal chocolate tasting, and guests will be treated to two sessions of spirit communication conducted by certified mediums Angelina Diana and Teresa Caputo. Call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707 or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And Signs of Life Radio is back. The number here is 1-888-627-6008. Why don't we start off by taking a call from a listener?
We have Stella on line two.
Okay. Hello, Stella.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you doing, Stella?
I'm fine. I just wanted to mention my granddaughter is 2 years old, and my son and my daughter-in-law have always told me that she speaks to herself before she goes to sleep. When she was younger, they thought she was practicing her words, but she's almost two now. She speaks very well, sentences, and she doesn't want them in the room when she's speaking. So they'll read her a book. she'll be ready to go to sleep, and then she'll say, bye-bye, Mommy, bye-bye, Daddy, sort of, you know, kicking them out of the room. My daughter-in-law said, okay, she left the room, and it had been maybe 20 minutes, and she went to check on her, make sure she was okay. She's still up and awake, talking to herself, and so she, you know, she says to my granddaughter, my daughter-in-law, bye-bye, you know, kicking her out, like, get out of here. And so my daughter-in-law was telling me the story, and I know that I believe in the afterlife because I have communication with somebody very special that passed away, but they don't believe in it.
Mm.
So I said to her, well, maybe she's speaking to her angels, but I don't know, should I even try to convince them that she might be speaking to somebody other than her angels, or just let it go and let them think that she's speaking to angels? Because I know she's speaking to somebody. You know, when I babysit, I see her looking up in the ceiling and smiling once in a while. So I know she sees.
Yeah. Well, do they now think that she's, are they open to the possibility at all, or they just think it's a phase she's going through?
No, they think it's a phase.
I have a question, Stella. What have you tried overhearing her by way of maybe a baby monitor to sort of hear what she's saying, and then maybe you'll get a little more evidential material to present to them?
Yeah, except I'm not there when she goes to sleep.
Even when you babysit?
Well, when I babysit her here, I see that she goes to sleep for her nap, but it's not her before. You know, like I'm right next to her when she's napping. She doesn't sleep over here.
So it's probably the nighttime.
And it's in her room. You know, it's like I'm conscious of the fact that we're both together in the living room when she's on her little bed, you know, ready to take her nap. Mm-hmm. But she's not kicking me out like she does with them when she's in her crib.
Right, but she may sense you as a more open person.
I think she does. Yeah, I'm just wondering. I mean, I know she is. I know she sees. You know, I know that.
Right. But, so if she speaks so well, couldn't you now be engaging her in a conversation? Like,
well, that's what I'm wondering. Should I ask her if she sees?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what all the experts seem to say, is that you should embrace it and you should engage them in conversation and find out more about who they see and what they see and when they see it and talk about it. You know, and not discount it. Not necessarily, you know, encouraging it, but finding out more, you know, and certainly showing an interest.
I think, too, Stella, if you have a photo album with you, maybe of some deceased family members, and just casually be going through the photos with her, there might just be someone that she'll comment on.
Well, I think I know who it is because my significant other passed away 2 years ago, and my older granddaughter, I know she sees him. Out of the blue, she'll come out with describing how he used to look and remember how he used to wear his glasses and this. I mean, totally out of the blue, how she misses him. I know she sees him, and my son knows she sees him. But these two, I'm just, you know, should I just do it by myself and not even mention it to the mother and father?
Well, that, you know, that's a family dynamic, and they might resent you for it, you know. I mean, so, I mean, I wouldn't hide the fact of what you're doing, and you know, but I would, discuss it in some way. I would think that would be my advice with your children about that you're having an intelligent conversation with her.
There's also a wonderful book called Kids Who See Ghosts by Carol Good.
Karen Good.
Karen, C-A-R-O-N, Good, G-O-O-D-E. And it does give advice to parents and to grandparents, of course, on how to guide these young children through their fear so that they know it's okay. It's not something, otherwise they grow up being afraid of it.
My little 2-year-old was afraid of anything and everybody. And I always thought, well, you know, like mediums will not just see the person, they'll see the people around them. So I thought that's where her fear came from. And only in the last month or two has she not been so fearful. So I'm thinking maybe somebody from the other side is helping her with this and, you know, trying to help her and say, okay, you know, it's natural, it's okay.
She might be sick.
It's worth reading that book. I think I'll take up reading that book.
Yeah, you could also check our radio archives because we've had her as a guest a few weeks ago, and the show might be up already. If not, it will be soon.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Good
Keep
luck.
Keep us posted.
You know, kind of a ticklish situation because you're not there all the time. You know, you don't have direct access, you know, to the child. And
right, but she can create a safe environment for this kid that the kid is clearly not going to get with the parents. You know, at some point the parents are going to say, okay, isn't it time for your friend to say goodbye? Here they keep walking into the room, and she does clearly, this kid doesn't want them in the room.
Yeah, well, that's what's interesting about it because that's not always the case, you know. I mean, a lot of children, because they don't see any reason to hide it or not be open, so they just talk, you know, in front of everybody.
But here, clearly the child must be sensing that the parents would not accept this, and so that's why she's dismissing them from the room, because this clearly to her is special time, and she's not giving it up.
Yeah. Well, that's one though, but I'd be curious, like you are, you know, to listen in on the conversation to gain more insight, to see who is she talking with somebody specific, and boy, wouldn't that be evidential, and boy, that might change the parent's way of thinking if you were able.
Yeah, and Melissa's idea with the family album is a great idea, because you're not putting anything into their head. They're just looking at pictures, and if one picture happens to tickle their fancy, mm-hmm. they're going to point it out.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's another thing. You come across a child like that. I mean, so you say to yourself as a parent, do I embrace this as a talent, as I would playing a musical instrument or, you know, being an artist, or do you treat it a different way, or do you make it seem like, well, this is normal, and you know, and it's a little special, but I don't know the answer to that. I mean, you don't want to. I mean, I've read things where it says just that to embrace it as you would any other you know, gift, and you know, tell the child that this is, you know, a special gift. But on the other hand, you don't want the child to, you know, going to school and saying, I have a special gift, which will open her up to judgment by people who don't understand what she does, you know. So
right. Well, using the word special gift is always a problem, from playing the piano to drawing to everything, because it gives that child this sense that they're better than other children. And, you know, just for the sake of children making friends and growing up normal, you don't want to do that. So I think we're moving into a kind of a world where more and more parents are open to this kind of stuff, so they'll recognize it and they'll be more open when children display this kind of gift or behavior or what you want to call it, and it will become the norm. And I certainly believe we were meant to all be doing this, and that unfortunately we grew up in a generation where it wasn't recognized and we weren't encouraged to make it a part of our lives. So now we're a generation that are questioning it in the generation that's coming up, and instead of embracing it.
I know that my daughter says of her daughter, right away she said it when she was just a few months old, that she felt she had known her before, that they'd had a relationship before, and felt that she was a very old soul. I can't wait till I can get her to talk a little more. That poor child.
I wonder what happens with, you know, with dreams. I mean, of course, we always hear about nightmares, you know, children's having nightmares, but you don't hear so much about children describing other types of, you know, of good dreams, you know, and the only ones they seem to talk about are the ones do you hear about kids, do kids tell you about their dreams?
Well, I've been surprised when they do. I have, you know, because it isn't that common for them to be able to express something sort of abstract like that. I can't remember any specifics, but I do recall them saying.
Yeah. Well, I guess you know, parents attributing everything to a nightmare. It's similar to you know, when you see a ghost, that it's something, you know, that's abnormal, not possible, and, you know, and go away. There are also advice that people give the kids that see ghosts is that if there's some somewhat troubled by it, maybe the ghosts are intrusive, or maybe, you know, they're picking up some vibes from other people that they maybe should be a little fearful, to just talk to the children and say, hey, if you don't want to see them, just tell them you don't want to see them. And very often when the children follow that advice and they say, you know, like, don't come back, or I don't see it, they don't, you know. So, you know, that's interesting too. I didn't remember. I mean, my memory stinks, but did our other kids, I mean, I know Bailey saw imaginary friends, but did our other kids see imaginary friends?
Corey used to have night terrors, so those were clearly taking her to a place that didn't make her very happy.
Yeah.
And Bailey also had this thing with buttons, if you remember, yeah, when she was talking to these people.
Yeah.
So,
that's a little weird.
Well, if we had known then what we know now, then we probably would have suggested, oh, past life regression. I mean, what's with the buttons? Where'd mm-hmm. that come from? So.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. This is a little bit off topic, but I was up last night thinking of an article that I was writing, so let me throw it out to you. It doesn't have to do with intuitive children, but I mean, do you believe that it's comforting for a person who's lost a loved one to believe that the loved one's passing was meant to be, or it was their time, or it was predetermined? Does that give somebody that's bereaved comfort?
You would have to answer that question. How would that make you feel if that's what people had responded?
Well, I have different opinions than most people, and I would imagine I might have different opinions than even a lot of the listeners, but from what I find, that is helpful to bereaved people, because it takes some of the guilt and some of the angst away, because, well, this is the way that it was meant to be, and there was nothing that I could have done that would have changed it, and this is the way, you know, the course of, you know, of life, you know. But that's always interesting to me, you know. I mean, but why so many people, you know, find comfort in that? I mean, my personal belief is that that this physical existence is not predetermined. The decisions that we make are not, you know, predetermined. But as I've talked about before, you know, that this life, even though it appears random, and in a sense it is an experiment, you know, that's random, it's one small little blip, and in the big picture, it's we learn to be that it's meaningless, you know. So whether you live 10 physical years or 100 physical years, that's still one little blip, and now you're in these other dimensions with no time and space, so it becomes insignificant. But I'm constantly hearing their time was up, you know, and I can't relate to it, or I tend to discount it. But
why can't you relate to it? I mean, just examining the people who have had near-death experiences paints the whole picture very perfectly, because they came back, and they come back saying they met someone who said, no, you can't go beyond this point, you have to go back. And then there were also those who had near-death experiences said, it's your choice. You could go back, or you could come here, meaning that they've somehow fulfilled what it was that they were here to fulfill, whatever series of events they took part in that made something occur that was supposed to have occurred. They did that, and now they are okay to cross over. But if they want to stay in the physical world, that's fine, too. They had a choice. But the point that they are not crossing over means that there's that decision that's already been made for you.
And you wouldn't know, I assume, if Bailey, before her passing, was sort of going through like a near-death experience and knew, when presented with that option, my work here is done. Even though I'm sure you would never feel that way about her, she sounds so remarkable that maybe what she came to accomplish, she had done. And unbeknownst to us, said, okay, I will choose to go.
Yeah, well, there is certainly I believe that we do interact with people in the spirit realm, you know, while we're in this physical existence. And, yeah, and of course you hear of a lot of people and children who know, so, you know, that they're gonna pass, and I believe that they are precognitive, and that it may be a case of just being able to see the future, and not necessarily being involved with spirit, although it could be, or it could be a message that's sent to them, you know, by spirit. And I believe that the universe, you can get information from the universe and other dimensions that help you make your decisions in this life. So you may choose certain pathways based upon this information that you get. I mean, I believe that all the dimensions and all these worlds are integrated, but I'm open to the possibility that, you know, that you're... I just have a hard time thinking that in between lives you say, okay, I'm going to come back and I'm going to live X number of years. To me, it seems more of a luck of the draw.
See, I think that's oversimplifying it, and that's putting it again into our physical terms. Right. I don't think you say, oh, you know what, let me incarnate for 22 years this time, and I think I'll be a starving child in Biafra. I don't think it works that way. I think we have this spiritual growth that we have as souls that bring us closer and closer to ultimate enlightenment, and experiencing tragedy and horror and challenges here in the physical world teach us that kind of stuff that brings us that enlightenment. So it's not like you're buying into a specific thing. You're buying into challenges on certain levels.
Do you remember that little Sam Kinison story, the comedian out in Vegas, I think?
The car accident.
And if someone approached the scene just in time to hear him as he died saying, oh, okay, I get it. And then he was gone.
Yeah, well, we certainly hear much about that, of people, you know, being comforted and visited, you know, just before they pass. And it is true what Fran said about it is evidential that most of them, people that do come back, of course, we only hear from the people that do come back. You know, you wonder if everybody else has the same decision.
Right.
Well, because they don't, because they're done.
Yeah.
They're not coming back.
Well, but they'd still reach that point when they were given the choice.
If they some got the choice.
Some got the choice, but many did not. Right. That was it. You're done.
Well, this certainly we could talk about that for hours. So I guess we're winding down to the end of the show. I know that I wanted to remind everybody again that the show hours will be changing next week. It'll be a little bit more convenient for everybody. We'll be an hour later. Those on the East Coast, you have a chance to maybe catch a little dinner before the show at 8 p.m. and on the West Coast and Pacific time, it will be starting at 5. And again, I would encourage everybody not to be disappointed and get your reservations in for the conference on November 12th before those sell out.
Okay. And don't forget to tune in next week to Signs of Life Radio. Meanwhile, we now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steffi, Judith Lockman, Wendy Lippo, Kathy Ward, Michael Tim, and any other listeners or people who know listeners out there that need some healing. And now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was by Masuro Emoto back on May 9th, 2010, in the healing of the Gulf after the BP tragedy. And just a little politicizing here. BP is back again, so get ready, everybody. They're doing more drilling.
And now I guess it's time after my political message to say...
Loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.